Okay, it's 10:30. Good morning, everyone. My name is Maggie Sarad. Thank you for joining us. We couldn't have asked for a better room. They just gave us a huge room today. This is the contractual compliance outreach session that we have been conducting at every ICANN meeting on Wednesday morning. Speak louder. Wow, okay, great. I will speak louder. Tell me if you can't hear me. For the audience, this session, we are providing different languages. It's available in different languages. But also, we will have on our staff who's also speaking Mandarin and Korean if there's a need for questions to be asked. So again, good morning and thank you for joining us. With me in the audience from the compliance team, I'm going to start with, on my left is Sumi Lee, Owen Smigelski, Yang Cheng Wang, and Roger Lim. The objective of our session today is to provide the ICANN community with an overall view of compliance program across registrars, registries, performance measurement, and audit. Remember, those are the four functions for compliance. So from a general update perspective, what we want to share with the team, with the audience, is that compliance now has a global presence in Singapore and in Turkey. With LA, Singapore, and Turkey, we are able to cover compliance activities in the three main hubs, and this allows us to be really at work 6 days a week, 24 hours a day. Since the last ICANN meeting, we have been successful in completing the 2013 RAA and the new registry agreement readiness plan that we have committed to the community. What that means, if you've been on the ICANN.org website, we have completed all the web forms that will allow the community to report a non-compliance or a perceived non-compliance issue to the compliance team. We have also built and put on the website all the Learn Mores. Learn More also refers to frequently asked questions. We have standardized and built all the required templates, from communication templates, correspondence, everything, to be able to respond consistently and efficiently and effectively across the globe to any compliance need. And of course, we have completed the compliance staff training in the registrar and registry space. The audit program that we communicated a year ago, it's a three-year audit program to baseline the current environment. So the scope of the audit program for year two is the same as year one, and will also be the same as year three, in order for us to baseline the current environment. So year two is now in the remediation phase. What that means is that the audit phase has been completed. The registrars and registries that were in the sample for this year two have submitted all the required documentation and information, and now the compliance team has completed the review of these documentations, and what we have done, we have initiated the reports back to the contracted parties to let them know what areas need to be remediated or to let them know that they have completed the audit for year two. So we are now in the remediation phase. Now everybody's been asking, what about the new registry agreement? Yes, they too will be audited eventually. What we are working on now, as you see in the last bullet, the team, our risk and audit manager, is leading the effort to complete an audit plan detailing which provisions, which areas need to be addressed, and how we're going to address it. By ICANN 50, we will communicate at the ICANN 50 during the outreach session, we will provide you with details on not only the registry audit plan, but also an update and the results and the outcome of the audit program year two. What I want to be clear on is that as we are building this new registry audit plan, before we present it to the community, the compliance team will conduct outreach sessions with the contracted parties. That is a very important step. So when we come back to the community, we are aligned and everybody is clear on what we're going to do. So we get the contractors party input into the plan. We address their concerns and questions. And then we present it to the community. So everybody's on the same page. In the previous slide, I shared with you how the compliance team has completed the efforts for the 2013 RAA readiness and the new registry agreement. This slide is important. I know sometimes people say, well, why do you always report volume? Well, volume can tell a good story. The story in the Learn More webpage views. Look at the webpage views we've had since we have added information. What does that translate to? Forget it's 25,000. What that means is that we are trying to build a way where the community can come to the compliance webpage and learn what is the issue at hand. In the past, what we found out was that some complaints were being filed without a true understanding of where, what, and how. Through this, we have been able to filter and address complaints more efficiently and effectively because the ICANN community is more informed as they are filing the complaints with us. On the bottom of the slide, not to diminish the importance of it, but it's also another webpage view hits that we monitor. If you guys remember a few meetings back when Fadi announced that part of increasing our transparency is to increase our reporting and the metrics. The ICANN community, through myican.org, has access to all the metrics at a statistical level for compliance. These are the metrics that we use to view the trending, to report back to you as a community. We do have operational metrics, and we do have registrar and registry-specific metrics, but those are kept for us to be able to work and collaborate with the contracted parties and address those issues. Year two audit program timeline, I've added this slide in here. This is the consistent process that was used for year one. It will be used in year two and in year three. So, again, transparency, consistency, the next phase, ICANN 50, is the reporting and publishing of the year two audit program. On the bottom of the screen, I would like to remind everyone in the audience how we continually follow the same process. So if you are a newcomer and this is your first time listening to compliance, the process that we built together starting in Dakar is the process that we are continually using. We continue to improve on the process by all means, but the foundation is the same. We always have what we call the 1-2-3 step. What that means is this is an opportunity for compliance to work with the contracted parties directly and address any non-compliance issues. It is directly between compliance and the contracted parties. It gives us the opportunity to address any issues and concerns because not every complaint we receive is a non-compliance or is a breach of a contract. We allow this collaboration to address and resolve. Now, if by the third notice, even in the audit plan, that doesn't happen, then there is a breach notice that is issued and published on the ICANN website. Through the breach notice, the community has access to the level of the timeline and effort that took place in 1-2-3. So the community, again, knows about it. So again, the 1-2-3 and the breach process is the same through the audit and any compliance areas we work with. This slide is to give you an idea what was the scope for year two, the sample size, and the number of impacted contracted parties across the ICANN community. Now we're going to get to what we call the scorecard. The scorecard is another way of also transparency. Transparency to the community, not necessarily on the volume, guys. It's more importantly on how are we working towards continually improving our non-compliance and also our turnaround and response to address the community complaints. On the right side, of course, it's like a checkbook. We have the total complaints received, and this is only reflective of November through February. March is not finished yet, and usually it takes us about 5 days to compile the data. But we will report those in our monthly updates. So in the past few months since the last ICANN meeting, we let the community know the number of complaints received by contracted parties. But most importantly, if you focus on the first, second, and third notice, our goal once we stabilize and continue our effort and growth with the new registry agreement and the 2013 RAA stabilization, our goal ultimately by partnering with the DNS engagement team is to hopefully not even reach a third notice, right? So we should, by proactively addressing some of the areas of concern, we eliminate a lot of those complaints. But for now, as you can see, this gives you a full view of the compliance process and the metrics around it. On the left side, we let the community know what is the average turnaround time by the contracted parties and also by the compliance team. With this, I'm going to turn over the mic to Owen. Owen's going to be sharing with you 2013 RAA discussions and clarifications. We understand the audience is mixed, so it's not only focused on contracted parties. We're going to be addressing those topics as it relates to all of us, ICANN community.
Thank you, Maggie. This is Owen Smigelski for the record. What you see here is a breakdown of the global complaint trend for registrars, and it's done based upon the different regions that ICANN identifies, and so you can see what the trending is and where that goes. And this allows us to identify issues where we may need to do some outreach. We do targeted outreaches, as required for certain areas and regions, because we do notice sometimes that certain complaint types are prevalent more in some areas than others. This is some further information which analyzes the different regions and shows what the complaint volume per registrar for that region are. And again, we use this data to target either specific registrars or regions. And in fact, we'll be doing a Asia-Pacific registrar outreach on, I think that's Thursday, which we'll be doing to address some of the issues that were identified for the Asia-Pacific region. You see here is the our trend of complaints that we're receiving regarding the bottom, the blue is the registrar count. The red line is the number of complaints that we're receiving per month. And then the black line is the total GTLD registration. And the data is showing that there's about a two-month lag for complaint volume following the total GTLD registrations. And that's something that we'll continue to monitor and forecast. This is a summary. This is a registrar dashboard, which shows a summary of all of the registrar complaints from November through February. If you look at the different complaint types there, the ones that are in all capital letters, those are ones that are for the 2013 RAA, with the exception of the UDRP complaint. That's an acronym, so it has to be in all capitals. But those are the legacy or the previous complaints that we had that applied to 2009-2001 RAA and are also applicable to the 2013 RAA. If you look at the registrar turnaround time, that is for all complaint types. The complaint types with the 1-2-3 process, we have a 5 business day deadline for each one, except for who is an accuracy. That one is 15 business days, and so the average registrar turnaround time includes all of those complaints. So that's why the number is a little bit higher, because it includes the 15 business day turnaround. This is a summary of the registrar enforcement activity since the Buenos Aires meeting. The number of registrars that received breaches or suspended or terminated, as well as the enforcement notice reasons that they received them. Looks like here a largest one is a failure to maintain and provide records to ICANN, which covers several different complaint types. This is a demonstrates where the volume is for us in terms of the various complaint types. If you look there, the first bar, the -4,000, what that's showing is the number of complaints that were actually closed before a first notice was sent to a registrar. There are a number of validations that the complaints undergo before they are sent to the registrar. Staff reviews them manually, so usually those are invalid complaints, or if we requested the registrar to provide additional information, either they did not provide it or that was not sufficient. And then that goes on through and shows where the various volume is for complaints in there. Something that the community had requested and we're now providing with the capability of all of the complaints that are finally in our consolidated complaint processing system are the reasons why complaints are being closed. And this reflects for ones that are being closed before first notice. There are some differences sometimes in why they would be closed. And you can see here some of the reasons why those complaints are being closed. And this is a little bit more of some general information regarding why all of the complaints for that particular type was closed. This is a domain renewal. I won't go into these in detail. These slides will be made available on ICANN.org and the outreach for compliance, but this will give you an idea of why all of these various complaints are being closed. And we do have all of our major complaints here identified. Some of the 2013 REA complaints are new, so we don't have as much numbers on them to report. And these closure codes go back until July, and the 2013 REA complaints were integrated into our tool in February. So now I'm going to jump in to the 2013 RAA complaint types. These are the 12 new complaint types that compliance identified from the new RAA, and these are all now in our complaint processing system, and there are forms online for the public to file these complaints with ICANN. If you want to go back and refer to these later, it identifies which sections are there, and I'll go now and highlight a couple of them that might be interest to the community. One of the big things that the 2013 RAA has is the Who Is Accuracy Program specification, which requires that certain information be verified and that certain information be validated for the Who Is information, either when a domain is registered or when there's a Who Is an Accuracy complaint received. So some of the highlights that must happen is that a registrar must verify or re-verify email addresses, and that's at the time of registration, as well as if there is a Who Is an Accuracy complaint. And if there is no affirmative response from the registered name holder or the account holder, then that domain must be suspended unless the registrar can do manual verification. They don't have to suspend for the account holder not doing an affirmative response, but they must do a manual verification. The 2013 REA does away with calendar and business days. Everything is calendar days, but compliance is going to maintain the 15 business days for Who Is an Accuracy to give registrars lag time with weekends and whatnot for processing those complaints. There are two concurrent parallel tracks that compliance is looking for registrars now with regards to who is an accuracy complaints. At the top of the chart, you see that a who is an accuracy complaint is received, and the registrar must verify the email and take reasonable steps to investigate, as well as reasonable steps to correct the alleged inaccuracy. So the one track is where compliance is looking for the affirmative response to the email verification, and the other track is that compliance is looking for to see that the who is updated as well as validated, that the domain name was suspended for no response, or that the information was verified correct and also validated. Another thing that the 2013 RAA requires is that registrars for thin registries, .com, .net are the two big ones, provide whois output in a standardized format, and that format matches the one that's required for the new GTLDs. ICANN has identified several issues that registrars have with this, and we have been working with the registrars to make sure they're compliant with the requirements for that whois format. Another thing that the registrars must do is provide ICANN with additional information through the registrar information specification, and they also have to post some additional information online as well, too, such as their officers and the ultimate parent entity. Another addition to the 2013 RAA are abuse reporting requirements, and there are two sections of that. One is for law enforcement, and for that the registrars must respond within 24 hours to a well-founded complaint, and they must do that 7 days a week. They must also have a law enforcement contact information available upon request. There's also another component where a registrar must take reasonable and prompt steps to investigate and respond appropriately to any report of abuse. And there's nothing in the RAA that says that that must be somebody from a local jurisdiction. Any applicable jurisdiction may apply. And also, we've noticed that some registrars have stated that they require a court order before investigating a report of abuse. However, if that is the position, then they must indicate to ICANN specifically which local law or regulation requires that. Otherwise, they must investigate that report and respond appropriately. The 2013 RAA also changes the length of time that some of the data is to be retained, as well as some additional requirements. I know there's some ongoing discussions about that elsewhere, so I won't cover that here. One thing that we have been noticing is some increased issues with registrars regarding privacy services and proxy services. There is a difference. Those are not synonyms. A privacy service shows the actual registrant's name, but with some alternative contact information, whereas a proxy service is considered the actual registrant itself and licenses the domain name to the beneficial user. So if there's a proxy service must be a separate legal entity from the registrar, the registrar cannot provide it that themselves. So with this, I'm going to pass it on to Sumi for the new registry agreement update.
Good morning. My name is Sumi Lee, and I'm a manager with contractual compliance working in the registry space. I will give you the general overview of what's happened since the last ICANN meeting in Durban. And this is the first meeting after Durban where we have delegated TLDs. So it is an exciting time for all of us. Let's move on to the compliance scope. Excuse me. So the scope of what we do is related to the registry agreement and all applicable consensus policies. So what you see here on this slide is the different areas that compliance monitors proactively, as well as the complaint types that we are ready to receive. This is the timeline, an overview of the timeline. of the process and where we are in that process. And as you can see, at the contracting phase, there is a compliance check that's done. At that time, there's the transition to delegation. And once the delegated TLDs, or once they're delegated, there is an outreach process. And then, as you can see, the other processes, the Sunrise claims, the DRPs, and the other new registry complaints and complaint types. And of course, we can't forget legacy TLDs. They are also monitored, and we continue to receive any complaints that come in. So on this slide, you can see all 40 complaint types, starting off with data escrow, monthly reports, and it goes all the way down. And one thing to note, some of these complaint types are internal, meaning that we generate those complaints. For example, data escrow is one. We do not receive complaints from the public about data escrow. We actively monitor that. And then we have the external complaint types, and those are the ones that we receive through our web form on our compliance page. So now I'd like to turn to what lessons we've learned so far. And as everybody knows, this is whole new territory. These are some of the things that we've encountered that we want to share with the community. And one lesson, a big one, is that there's been perhaps some confusion about when the responsibility or obligation starts. And that's when the registry agreement, it's upon delegation, not when there are domain names registered. This is our statistics on the complaints that we've had since November of 2013 to February. And as you can see from the chart, as well as the list of complaint types, because we are still in the early phases, we don't have any breaches or terminations. You can see our turnaround time over to the left. And as you can see, we've had a total of 226 complaints processed. And then right below that, you see the number closed. And then the breakdown of each of the different complaint types that we have handled so far. So you can note that the data escrow portion, it will be bigger. It's 114. And that's based on since the first delegation back in October of 2013. So one area that we wanted to touch upon is the types of complaints that we've handled so far and some of the key requirements that we want to highlight. So under Zone File Access, as you can see, the specification and the section that applies, but that the Zone File data must be accessible. And it's based on 000, or all basically UCT. The URS. That's something we have not had any complaints in this category, but we wanted to remind everybody what the requirements are. That registry must lock the domain name in dispute within 24 hours. That's an important takeaway. If the URS provider submits a complaint to ICANN, we again follow the 1-2-3 process, but in this case, it's expedited, so it's 24 hours. So each phase of our 1-2-3 process would be a 24-hour period. Now, Now, this has been a hot topic so far, and so we do want to go over that, the public interest commitments, and it's under specification 11 of the base agreement. Now, both, and I don't know how many of you were there during the board meetings, but the mandatory and voluntary commitments are enforceable and applicable. They are within the base agreement or within the registry agreements. Let me see. Sorry, I don't know why it looks that way.
Please take us to slide 35.
Technical difficulties. Oh, thank you. So back to our, second bullet point. So we conduct a preliminary review of the complaint to ensure that it's complete, has a claim of non-compliance with at least one of the commitments, and that the reporter is in good standing. So we do that initial threshold check. Once that happens, and the registry and the reporter, they have then 30 days to resolve the dispute or not. And if it's not settled, ICANN investigates, or we will send this to the standing panel. And then the standing panel has 15 days to return a decision to ICANN. And the last bullet is important because if the reporter prevails, ICANN sends a notice of breach. So we are not going through our standard 555 notice process. We would then just send a notice of breach to the registry operator, and then they would have 30 days to cure. And those are some additional resources and the FAQs, as Maggie mentioned before.
So thank you, Sumi and Owen. With this, it concludes our presentation. And now, as we committed to you since the beginning of this outreach session, you will have plenty of time for questions from the audience. So if you would, we have mics, and we also have translation services on staff and in the booth.
We have a question from the Adobe room from Steve Metalitz. The question is, how is manual verification defined in terms of the 2013 RAA WHOIS accuracy specification? In other words, if an unverified registration is not canceled and instead of being manually verified, is not canceled, but instead being manually verified, what must the registrar do and how long can it take to do it?
Thank you, Steve. This is Owen Smigelski for the record. There are two components to that. I'm going to speak first to the account holder, which is kind of a customer, a main customer that can register our domains on behalf of other people. The manual verification, there is no time limit defined in the 2013 RAA. However, the registrar must perform that manual verification. For the registrant or the registered name holder, there is that 15 calendar day window. That's it. If there's no manual verification by the end of that 15th calendar day, then on the 16th day, that domain must be suspended, even if the registrar is continuing to do manual verification. Regarding the definition of manual verification, that is not something that is defined in the contract. However, it is something that compliance will look at on a case-by-case basis. And there have been several examples that we've given, such as if the customer has provided you with a copy of their driver's license that would verify either an identity or an address, that's could be considered manual verification. Or another possible example would be if the registrar maintains credit card information on file for for payment for the domain name, and there is address information that is stored with that and can be verified that way. because that would not be an automatic verification. The registrar would have to do something manually for that that would satisfy that. Again, these are not exhaustive examples, but just some examples. And ICANN will certainly consider other ones if the registrars would provide that information.
Thank you. Mike Pelage, for the record. My question, on the chart, I believe there were three instances of compliance with registries regarding the reserve name list. I think that's what the, could you perhaps elaborate on what types of inquiries were submitted and whether they've been closed?
This is the slide you're referring to. Yes, the reserved
three.
SLT.
Yes, reserved name SLT.
Okay. Actually, in fact, those complaints were not specific to reserved names. They were, I guess, to put it clearly. It was essentially an invalid complaint. It wasn't about a reserve name issue or an SLD block list issue. It just came through that particular form because the person submitting didn't understand it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Alan Greenberg, at large advisory committee. A couple of questions regarding the PIC enforcement. The first one is, you use the term in good standing. What does in good standing mean? You said that a complaint will be accepted and processed if the complainant is in good standing. Does that have a definition?
The reporter. Well, I don't think there was any definition about that.
This is Owen Smigelski for the record. Alan, we have encountered in the past abusive or problematic reporters. One of the reasons why all of complaints are now manually processed by compliance before being forwarded to a contracted party is there have been people who have had abusive profanity, racial insults in there, and there's no need for that. And we have actually on some occasions blocked those people after multiple warnings that they aren't able to submit these types of complaints and abuse the system and harass ICANN and registrars. So that's what it means by a reporter in good standing, somebody who is not banned from making submissions. And to date, I think there's only one person who that's happened to the entire time.
To be clear, I wasn't arguing that there might be people not in good standing, but I believe if you're going to use that term, you have to actually have a written definition of it somewhere. The parameters may be vague, but you need to carefully define it.
I believe the procedures actually define that. I'm trying to pull it up to give you the specific language, but it is in the procedures.
Okay. The more substantive question is, because you were made reference to the standing panel, I am assuming you're talking about disputes filed under the dispute resolution process. The dispute resolution process requires that the complainant show material harm because of the violation. What processes do you have in place to enforce PICs if the complainant cannot demonstrate material harm to themselves?
I'm sorry. Are you asking whether or not if they don't show material harm,
that's
what do
correct.
We do?
The DRP requires, I believe, last time I looked at it, that the complainant demonstrate material harm to be able to file, to be eligible to file a complaint, a dispute. The question is, what compliance processes are in place if the complainant cannot show material harm? An example might be a consumer organization, isn't harmed themselves, but is trying to protect people. It could be an individual user who recognizes that a statement made within the PIC is simply being blatantly ignored. The question is, what processes are in place other than the DRP to get those looked at?
Well, right. We do not, or we do the preliminary review and pass that on to the registry operator. So I'm not sure what additional processes you're asking about, or...
Sorry, but my understanding is under the DRP, you will not process, you will not pass it on unless the complainant has demonstrated harm.
Sure. So that would be on a case-by-case basis. I don't think we can explain that in a vacuum. We would have to look at the facts, and what is considered material harm would be based on what's alleged and the evidence that's provided by the complainant. But we would follow our process just like any other complaint.
Which I think translates to if I simply say there is no material harm, that means you cannot submit it under the DRP because the DRP requires material harm.
So, Alan, if I may take this. This is Maggie. If you notice on bullet number 2, again, we have not yet, we don't have data to put to be able to address to it factually. For the time, if a report, what we know is in bullet 2 states, if we have a report that's filed, I can does a preliminary review to make sure that it's complete. So to your point, if there is not a material harm, we will probably go back to the board and explain to us what is this complaint about, where do you see the issue. We will have to have a better understanding of what is it we're trying to address and resolve so that we pass it on to the registry operator and to the reporter to work through it per PIC-DRP process. So that's the what we call a report that's filed. What I had hoped the audience also heard earlier at the beginning of the presentation, in the next trimester and by ICANN 50, we're going to be detailing a lot more what does it mean to audit in the new registry agreement, and we're going to try to do a pilot or a review ourselves proactively on the PICs. Based on the TLDs that have been delegated, we're going to initiate a review, or if you want to call it a pre-audit, just to see what does the environment look like and what we're experiencing. We're not going to sit and wait on a report to come our way.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Kathy Kleiman with the Non-Commercial Users Constituency, and I wanted to say thank you. You explained some very difficult issues very clearly, and I'll be circulating your slides. I thought you did an excellent job with them. Thank you. They can't hear me. That's not a complaint I've ever gotten, right? Exactly. So this is my question. It's kind of a simple question, but how many domain names have been revoked so far due to validation or verification problems? Thank you.
Our complaint processing system, we have introduced some automation to that. And it will automatically close complaints whose inaccuracies for ones that have been suspended. So that's one thing we track, but we don't have in our current system the ability to indicate why something was or was not, if a verification or validation failed. And that would only be for a complaint that comes to ICANN. We don't have visibility to what's going on with the registrars on their own domain registration and things like that. But I think that would be something that would be more applicable to the WHOIS accuracy of studies that are going on with that through the NORC report and the PDP associated with that. I know that's something that is anticipated to be included with that.
Thank you.
Max Malzoba, FATED. The question is related to centralized file zone access. Registry agreement says that a registry must enter into agreement with any internet users. But when, as an internet user, I register to that site with the purpose of like going to check how it works, I saw a simple web click-through agreement, which basically says that it was concluded on behalf of registry. But registry haven't granted you the right to conclude any agreements on our behalf. And it seems that this leads to the agreement between the parties, like internet user, any internet user, and the website, okay, or the ICANN on behalf. It's not legally binding, so they can do whatever they please to. So the simple question is it possible to add to the procedure ability to, for the registry to have separate process of concluding agreement, even their simple web click-through agreement between the parties instead of generic we behalf on behave on any registry, which you cannot until you have a letter of attorney or something, which we won't give. Thank you.
Maxim, thank you for your question. Sorry, I cannot answer it today, but if you don't mind, can you send us the question in writing and we'll make sure we forward it to the right team who manages and oversees that area and they can respond to you or try to address it?
The answer was, okay, it's a good idea to give us a letter of attorney.
You know,
power.
All ideas are good. Whether they're implementable and contractually binding is a different discussion. But thank you for your question and your recommendation. But if you can send it in writing so we do not miss an element of your question.
Thank you.
And the email address is compliance@icann.org, and we will forward it to the right team members who address these areas.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Stat Hammock with Rightside. Maggie, Sumi, compliance team, thank you very much for the presentation. It was very informative. I have two questions, if I may. The first is related to the registry audit process plan that you're going to present and announce at ICANN 50. You mentioned that between now and that time, you'd have some outreach sessions. You come out to the registries and get some feedback as you bake that plan. My first question is, what form do these outreach sessions going to take? Are they webinars? Are they meetings? Or what form do those take? And then I have a second question.
Thank you for your question, Stanton. So we will follow the same process we followed when we created the three-year program. What compliance is in the process of doing is finalizing the details. We will send to all the registry operators through the DNS engagement team. We will send you an invite. In the past, we've done it through a survey where people can select the sessions they want to attend. It's a closed session with the contracted parties only. So when we're focusing on the registry agreement, it will go to the registries. When it's a registrar, it only goes to the registrars. So what we do, instead of a survey, what we're going to do now is send and inform the registry operators of the 2 to 3 sessions we're going to be conducting. That way they can log in, follow us. It will be in the form of a webinar, Adobe. We will present the program, usually about 10 to 15 minutes, and then leave about 45 minutes for questions. At the end of the presentation, we leave an email address, which is a compliance audit address, so to allow us to receive your questions and respond to them before an ICANN 50 meeting. At this time, we are planning to conduct this. So the ICANN 50 is in June, will be in May. Okay? So to allow us time to address the questions, clarify them, and we can come to the community with a plan that's solid.
Thank you. Now, I may ask another question. On the code of conduct, or on the registry complaints that you've received so far, I saw that you had 5 complaints already related to the code of conduct. But as you know, the code of conduct has many specific elements, right? And so what I'd like to hear is, could you be a little more specific as to what kind of complaints you received related to the code of conduct? Thanks.
Sure. Stanton, it was actually, in fact, mostly related to not receiving it at all. So, and therein lies another lesson that we mentioned at the beginning is just knowing when the obligations start and... That was the biggest issue. And I apologize that during the presentation I said since the last ICANN meeting in Durban, but it was actually Buenos Aires. Sorry about that.
Youngsun Wong for the record. We have 2 questions from the Adobe room. Steve Metallitz, question. Follow-up regarding manual verification. If it is carried out by consulting credit card information held by registrar, why is 15 days allotted to this process? Since registrar already holds this information, shouldn't the deadline be much faster?
This is Owen Smigelski for the record. I just gave one illustrative example, Steve. It's not intended to be the method, and it does give the registrar that time to follow the procedure and contact the registered name holder if they want. There's no expedited thing requirement in there that it must be a credit card information that's used for the manual verification. We leave that open to the registrars to have as many possible ways for them to perform that function.
And the second question is, are you proactively enforcing the obligation under interim privacy proxy specification of the 2013 RIA to post the terms and conditions under which such services are offered, or are you depending on public complaints? If it is the latter, is there some centralized place where these postings are compiled, or does the public have to track down each registrar and each associated proxy service in order to see the posting obligations have been satisfied?
Thank you, Steve. This is Owen again for the record. That is currently something outside of the audit and the scope. However, sometimes there are compliance checks to see if there is compliance. But this is a complaint that we would primarily depend upon the community to submit to us. It is something we do encounter when we see a privacy proxy address in a WHOIS complaint, for example. But at this time, there are no plans to do a review for that. For the public complaints, if it's something that results in a breach, then that would be something that would be published on ICANN.org. However, up until that point, it's the informal resolution the process, and that is kept confidential.
Yeah, okay. Dirk Krzyżanowski from Doc Berlin, that partly answers my question. So only when there's a real breach noticed by you, then it's published that there's a compliance issue with one case. Are the, all the other compliance cases are not published on a website or something like this. So I saw that case with I think one of the donut strings which allowed eco.tld or something like this. I wasn't sure if that was published or self-published by the applicant or by another party then.
So let me address your first question. You're attending our session tomorrow, right, on the onboarding for new TLDs? I hope so. We will go in depth tomorrow about the process and at what point and how do we exhaust the communication and the collaboration. As you heard yesterday in the registry stakeholder group meeting, the collaboration and working with the registry operators is in the 1-2-3 phase. That allows us to talk to you, you provide answers. If it's not satisfactory, you will get 3 opportunities. It's only between ICANN and the contracted party. If after the 3rd notice, it could be one of 2 things. The simplest scenario, if we do not receive any answer or no collaboration by the 3rd notice, we will breach, and it will be a breach that's going to be public on the website under on ICANN.org, and it will have the chronology of the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd notices that went out, the email call, and the emails, the email address, the phones that we've called on, so that the public knows the activities that led up to a breach. But before a breach, we do not publish.
Okay.
Okay? So please join us tomorrow. We're going to take that into much more depth, because in the 1-2-3 process also, the first step is an email. But in the 2nd notice, as we all know, email is overwhelming to all of us. We, the compliance team, after sending the 2nd notice, usually waits 2 to 3 days and initiates a phone call to the contracted party. Registrar or registry, the process is the same. We initiate a phone call to make sure that you have received the inquiry or the notice and to address any questions there might be. In the 3rd notice, after we send the email, we immediately fax and initiate a phone call. So we try to exhaust every communication means and reaching the contracted party before we reach a breach.
Hello, Mike Pelage again for the record. I apologize if this question has been answered previously. Can you give us any update on where ICANN is on the RFP for the PIC panelist? I know it was issued. Have those panels or those individuals been selected, or is that another ICANN silo to answer that question?
No. We have an update, but I'm sorry. I have a brain overwhelm here. Let me.
This is Roger for the record. Based on our understanding, the panel will be decided and contracted before the ICANN 50 meeting.
When you say panel, is it a group? How many people are we talking about?
So this effort is led by Krista Papek and the DNS engagement team. We contribute to the process, but we do not lead it. If you want much better fact-based answers, I would recommend asking Krista.
Krista, okay, thank
please.
You.
Good morning, Maggie, Owen, and all the lovely compliance people. Michaela Nayland for the record, Chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. I wasn't actually here for most of the session since I've been off dealing with DNSSEC stuff somewhere else. Just with respect to your 123 system and everything else, just from the registrar's side, and I feel very confident speaking as chair of the registrars, we appreciate that you do not start publishing registrars every time you get a complaint. I've heard from various quarters this week that certain groups would like to make out that ICANN compliance is dysfunctional, it's not doing its job, that all these crazy things, based on the fact that you are not publishing the names and the details of every single complaint that you get. And I can assure you that if you did start doing that, that we on the registrar side would not be particularly happy. And that's being worded this very mildly. I think actually the better term would be we'd be furious. And then after we went through the stage of being furious, we would just start issuing legal actions against you for defamation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because a complaint is not the same thing as, I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, I mean, as a crime. I mean, I can be accused of doing something, that doesn't mean I actually did it. And the thing is that it needs to be a collaborative effort. And sure, if we don't resolve it, then yes, you're entitled and you're meant to take action against us, and that is not an issue. But just to make sure that people do understand that this kind of expectation that compliance start publishing everything is not acceptable. And for the record, ICANN's compliance staff are super responsive most of the time. I emailed them at 4 a.m. local time. They got back to me about 8:30 this morning. I mean, that's not bad. Thanks.
So thank you, Michele, for your comment. What I would like to remind everyone in the audience is that when the compliance process was put together, it's true. I think I said that at the Registrar Stakeholder meeting. This Singapore meeting is the anniversary of my 3 years with ICANN in a week. So when I first showed up here in Singapore 3 years ago, we realized where were some of the challenges ahead of us. And I engaged with every stakeholder group within the ICANN community. Everybody was anxious to help compliance. And I thanked them, and I reminded everyone the only help we need from each stakeholder group within the ICANN community is a clarity to your expectations. What is this stakeholder group about? What are your expectations, and how can we work together? That's the best help you can provide. Go away from the Singapore meeting. The compliance team, based on the feedback and the collaboration we had, we put together a draft of a process. We, in Dakar, circulated the process to everybody and in Costa Rica, and we got feedback from the different groups how the process is going to be built and how it's going to operate. So, Michele, if there is a change to the process, and if there is a request to change the process, it will have to circulate to all the register, to all the stakeholder groups, and we'll need to understand the reason, and we'll bring everybody into this forum. It's not a process that we built in silo. It's a process we put for everyone. What I want to also highlight to everybody and remind everyone, not every complaint we receive is a valid complaint. We want to be given that benefit of doubt to be able to resolve issues, but believe me, we are on top of the issues. Actually, yesterday at the Registry Stakeholder Group meeting, I think it was Jeff Newman who jumped, he said, we got delegated within 8 hours, you were sent us a first notice. So I said, please get on the public forum and let the world know. Now, good or bad, the reason I'm mentioning that is we will enforce the contract. And at a minimum, as I've said to all the contracted party, when you receive an email from compliance, respond. You do not respond, we will get to the next level. I have furious registrars who called me when we breached them. You're ruining our reputation, retract that breach, remove it. And I said, no, I will not. And I did not ruin your reputation, you did it to yourself. We exhaust every communication channel to work with you and to give you that opportunity, if there is a breach of the contract, to fix it. And we're learning, especially now. We have so many new things on our plates. There are the current contracts, there's the 2013 RAA, there's a new registry agreement. It's a learning curve, and it's going to be a ramp up for many of us, including compliance. So the process continues as it is. Now, to the public, you want to know what happened in 1-2-3 process? Open the breach notice. In the breach notice, we tried to bridge that gap of where is this communication gap. In the breach notice at the bottom, after the explanation provided, you will find a chronology. In the chronology, it gives you the date of when the first notice went out, to which email address, and when it was due. And it gives you the date every step of the way that led to the breach. That's a lot of information that was not available before. So we hope with that chronology we have bridged that gap.
Youngson Wong for the record. We have a question from the chat room. Steve Metallitz, question. Will there be any opportunity for non-contracted parties to have input in the new GTLD registry audit program before it is presented at ICANN 50? You had said your webinars are limited to contracted parties, and thank you to the compliance staff for this detailed briefing.
Steve, I miss you in the audience. You can't do remote participation. So we had not contemplated that, but what I would like to encourage, if you have an idea or a concern, send us an email to compliance@ICANN.org. We will review it, and if it applies to the scope and the areas and we need clarification, we will reach out to you. But an audit, again, if you look at the function of the audit, the function of the audit is not just conducted just based on the contract. We have a very qualified subject matter expert in risk and audit. We review, we do risk assessment, risk analysis, and we build it based on what we're hearing. And every ICANN meeting, we listen very carefully to everyone and build also an audit program that strengthen and will respond to the community concerns. So everybody's been concerned. It's been a hot topic on the PIC. So we're not going to wait to that audit to be completed. We're trying to kind of proactively see what are the concerns in the PIC and how to address them. So Steve, the short answer, if you have something you want to share with us, please send it to the compliance email. And the other short answer is no, this is directly with the contracted party so that they understand what is the scope. We're not asking them for the scope. We're not asking the contracted party to tell us which provision they would like us to audit. No. They don't even have a choice in that. We're telling them, here's the scope we're going to audit you on. Here are the elements that we need you to be ready to provide an answer. Here is the validation, and that's what it means. This is the scope of the outreach. It's not to scope the audit scope itself. It's more to collect and inform them what's coming their way and to try to provide opportunities for clarification.
Thank you. Alan Greenberg, still a member of the At-Large Advisory Committee, but in this case speaking purely on my own behalf. And this is in response or follow-on to Michele's statement. And again, speaking on my own behalf, I would strenuously object to a suggestion that all complaints be published. I think, but I haven't thought it through, I might even object to all valid complaints being published, that is, those vetted by compliance and that you then follow on with the registrar. On the other hand, I believe records of identification of registrars who have an abnormally large number of valid complaints, even if they are rectified once you pass it on to the registrar, but an abnormally large number of valid complaints compared to the number of total sponsored domains is something that I believe is of interest to the public. That is, registrars who have large numbers of valid complaints in respect to the number, which says they are different from the norm. That I would like to see published. Thank you.
And I'll just follow on. I'm glad he qualified that by saying, in proportion to the number of domains. No, I know you did. And for the record, it's Michele Nalan again, Chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group, again, speaking as Chair of the Registrars. It's the proportion thing that is key, because we, as a smallish, quite small registrar, if we get one complaint, it's one complaint out of X number of domains. If you look at GoDaddy, GoDaddy have X to X cubed or whatever. I mean, it's a totally different set. If you look at it as a percentage, that needs to be taken into consideration. I know from some of the data that the compliance department shared with us when we were working on IRTP Part B, which is the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy, for those of you who don't know all the acronyms, there were some registrars at the time that had, you know, tiny number of registrations, stupidly large number of complaints. And it was obvious. And exactly, it speaks exactly to what Alan's saying, and I think we can agree on that. Thank you.
Dirk Krzyzanowski, .Berlin, Berlin. Just a question. Sometimes we are in doubt if we are really compliant with a certain topic, let's say cross-ownership or reserved names or specification, whatever. Should we give these questions to you or to the customer support center then? Because the customer support center might not interact with you, we had the experience, but I'm not sure what to do.
So thank you for asking the question. I want to assure the audience, yes, we did have, and I think, again, it was mentioned in the registry stakeholder meeting yesterday, how the right hand was not talking to the left hand at ICANN. And I wanted to thank, you know, I thank the audience for bringing it up. But what I wanted to do is assure you that now we do meet and we do talk before. So if you want to submit your question to the customer, it's fine. They will know if there's a need, they will send it our way. But if you also want to submit your question to compliance@ICANN.org, we will also make sure we engage with other team members within ICANN if it's not just a compliance issue. Okay?
So I might, if I file the questions through the customer support, I might use the keyword compliance somewhere, so then they see
yes.
It might be a topic that
yes.
You need to answer.
Yes, okay. And to validate what I just said to you, I'm not going to put Michele on the spot, but I may. Michele, if you don't mind standing up. Michele is the director for the customer support desk at ICANN. She's new, so don't bombard her yet, please. Don't scare her. We're happy to have her. But we have the compliance team, and Michele works constantly and collaborates. We even work with the DNS engagement team, because sometimes it might still be within that area. So we have to have the three areas work collaboratively to be able to provide the right answer and the right service to the ICANN community. Wherever you go, we'll answer you. That's a commitment. And let me tell you, if no one answers, send it to my direct email. Okay. Is that good enough?
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Thank you.
Youngsin Wong from the record. We have a question from Chris Davis at Secure Domain Foundation. Question, does ICANN compliance have a plan to deal with large volumes of complaints in the future? We analyze around 150,000 distinct malware samples per day, and around 90% of those malware samples are using domain names for their command and control infrastructure. To my understanding, under the 2013 RAA, there is a requirement for registrars to respond to abuse to stay compliant. I'm wondering if ICANN has a plan to deal with, say, 2,000 to 3,000 complaints per day. We have no intention of flooding ICANN with complaints, but others might.
Chris, thank you for your question. I want to ask you, were you at the ALAC session on Sunday? Alan Greenberg presented an opportunity for what we call a general bigger issue of a concern. So to answer your question is, ICANN prepared to receive volume of complaints. I don't know how to answer that. We're here, we're ready, and if we need to augment staff or change something, we will address that. But if it's something of what I call more of a pattern or an issue that you know at a TLD level or within a registrar, what we're going to, you can send an email and say, for example, at this level we're seeing a lot of problems in this area, but you need to provide us some facts so that when we go to the contracted party, they can work with us in addressing that challenge.
And if I could, this is Owen, if I could just add something in, Chris. Your question says that the 2013 REA has that registrars must respond to abuse to stay compliant. You do need to follow up with that registrar first with that abuse report, and if they do not take the appropriate steps to respond or correct, then it can be a complaint with ICANN. But that's one thing we're going to look for in those abuse reports that are submitted is, was the registrar contacted? If not, we'll require the reporter to contact the registrar first, and then if no action is taken, then it can be a complaint with ICANN.
It's Michaela Nalen. Again, I'm just responding actually to Chris, because I'm also on the board of the Secure Domain Foundation. The first thing I think that people need to be reminded is that there are three contracts for registrars in the wild at the moment. The number of registrars in the 2001 REA is obviously dropping all the time and will eventually hit zero fairly quickly. Sorry, how many?
There's one left right now.
Okay, there's one left. Okay, that's actually a useful statistic. Thanks, Owen. So there's one registrar left on the 2001. There's a load of us on the 2009, and there's a growing number on the 2013. This abuse thing is specific to the 2013. It doesn't exist on the 2009. So, you know, Chris can follow up with me directly because he obviously has my contact information. And if there is an issue, let's see if we can work it through. But you know, please remember that there are obligations. The obligations are specific to the version of the contract, and just because you would like to see something there or something being an obligation doesn't make it so. Thanks.
Hello, Volker Greimann, Registrar speaking. Just a piece of advice for people trying to contact a registrar with abuse complaints, sending us a list with domain names that say these domain names are used for X, please do something about that, doesn't usually help. It's not sufficient for us to investigate the issue. We need hard, clean facts to make it obvious that this violation is going on. Show us the violation in detail. The clearer you can make it per domain name, individually, the faster we can act and the better we can do something about the problem. Not everyone on the abuse team is trained for every kind of abuse, so when you, for example, have a botnet command and control center, show us, show the evidence, and we'll take care of it.
Volker, thank you for that, and that is also something that we look for in those complaints to see whether that additional information was provided. Just stating domain X is doing something bad is not sufficient for an abuse report. You know, the registrar does need some more information.
And just Michaela Neal, just adding to that, from our perspective, and this is speaking as both a registrar and as a hosting provider, our abuse, the staff that manage our abuse desk, they deal with a varying volume of tickets. Some days it could be one ticket, other days it could be 200 tickets. What they need is, and this I'm saying this to everybody in the room, everybody remotely, please put the key information at the top of the report. Don't make us read through 2 pages of legal mumbo-jumbo. I don't care who your client is. I don't care how many trademarks they have. All I want to know is the domain, the URL, and the type of abuse. The other stuff, add it afterwards, please. Don't put it at the top. Put the key bit at the top. And Christina Rosette wants to say something now, because I've obviously upset her. So I'd cede to Christina.
Hi, James Bladel from GoDaddy, and just wanted to address the specific question that was raised from the remote. I'm sorry, I missed the name, but it was the remote participant. One of the changes that was involved in the 2013 RAA is registrars are now required to list their abuse point of contact in who is output, and registrars who have signed on to that have modified their who is output to contain that abuse. And what we found is that the volume of complaints submitted through those channels have skyrocketed. And I'm not talking like, you know, up 20%. I mean, hundreds of percentas, you know, double or triple the number of complaints being received. And complaints vary from, you know, I've found a botnet command and control or a malware distribution point to I hate your advertising or please give me a job. So everyone has a very varied definition of what constitutes an abuse complaint. I can tell you that the result is that the number of complaints submitted has skyrocketed. The response time has gone up linearly, as you might expect, where we might have previously responded to complaints in a matter of a couple of days. Now we're seeing that it's not unusual that 5 to 10 business days is more likely, and this is a direct result of us trying to help. Attempting to help us by posting that abuse in the Who Is Contact has actually had the opposite effect and made that a polluted channel for abuse reports. So just an observation, and I know that other registrars have shared this as well.
I'm Christina Rosette, IPC, speaking in my personal capacity. I get it in terms of what Volker and Michaeli said about abuse reports. Here's my ask. I think it would be extraordinarily helpful, whether it would be compliance, working with the registrar stakeholder group, working internally to kind of come to an internal agreement as to here is the, from our perspective as registrars, here is kind of a standard format of what we would love to see. And at a minimum, here are the standard requirements we need. And if that gets done, I will promise you that we will distribute it to our list and to all of our members and to ask all of our organizational members, which in turn have tens of thousands of members, here's what you need to be using if you're going to use this channel. Because I get it. If I know what you need, that's going to make my job easier. It's going to make everybody's jobs easier, and less time is going to be wasted. So that's my ask. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Alex Deacon. I just want to second that. I think that would be very helpful if we could come up with some best practices or a template of, you know, information, that minimum set of information that would be required to submit these. And you would even think over time, if it makes sense, we could XMLize these things and automate them and the like. So I just wanted to agree with Christina, and I'm happy to assist and volunteer if that does happen.
Michaela Neal again, putting on a different hat. Within the APWG, there has been some work on this. I think there might have been something in MOG as well, the Messaging Anti-Abuse Working Group. I don't know if Norm knows anything. Norm? Yes, I'm calling on Norm Ritchie, who, whichever hat he's wearing, he might be able to speak to this.
It's Norm Ritchie, also from the Secure Domain Foundation. We are trying to develop a specification with the registrars and the cyber security community on what would be required for various types of requests. The APWG is doing the same thing, and we're going to team up with them so there is hopefully just one. So we really invite any registrars to look at the APWG and go to the Secure Domain Foundation and post it right there and supply some feedback on what will work.
And just my last thing is, so if we can work this out on our side, then we're more than happy to share that with Christine and whoever else wants to send us valid complaints. Thank you.
Any questions in the queue? No. Any questions in the audience? Was this a helpful session? There's my cheerleader on the phone.
Oh, Maggie, we did have one question, actually. Sorry. Where can the PowerPoint presentation be downloaded?
Yes. All of the compliance presentations this week will be uploaded to ICANN.org. If you go to the compliance, under resources, there's the compliance webpage, outreach. So under the outreach section, compliance webpage, we will commit to uploading all of those no later than end of next week.
Sorry for waiting for the last minute. Jeremy Ebbles from ARI Registry Services. I just got a question. I'm a little interested in the data escrow complaints. I'm not sure complaints is the right term, but can you give me some context as to what a data escrow failure or complaint might be? I'm assuming it's an upload failure or the content is incorrect or something like that. I'm just curious as to what that might be, please.
I'm sorry, did you say data escrow for registries?
Registries, yes, correct.
Yes. Again, as I said earlier to Stan, I think there were technical issues, so most of them were related to the failure to upload. So they were technical related, not the actual data related, and the notifications. Those were the two main areas.
So if I can just follow up on that a little bit. Is there a methodology by which if a compliance see a number of complaints or failures that are consistently happening, will that be communicated to registry operators so they can effectively self-regulate or get in front of the problem?
Well, as with any of the complaint types that compliance handles, we are always contacting our contracted parties. So yes, we would, if there's an issue, we would contact the registry operator with the notice alerting them to the specific issues, whether it's failure to receive the report or if there's a substantive issue. We do address that in our notice.
I'm more speaking more broadly for the community, I guess. So if, let's say, another registry operator or another back-end service provider is failing in one area or has constant, and it happens more than once, or it's a number of back-ends are doing the same thing, I'm just thinking it would be useful to share that information so that everyone can see that. I guess there's probably IP that is potentially breached, but to get in front of the problem so that there is no continual breach of the compliance issue?
Sure, and actually that's exactly what the lessons learned, and we're going to go into more details in our session tomorrow, but that is where we provide to the community, to the registry operators, our contracted parties, as to the bigger, broader picture of the issues we've seen, the areas that we can work with the contracted parties to improve.
Great, thanks very much.
Sure.
Nothing else. Any other questions? Feedback? I want to thank each and every one of you guys for coming to our session. Like I said, this session is open for everyone. As you heard, we have registries, we had registrars, we had IPC, we have ALAC, and we have everybody else here. And the idea is for us to not just report back to you and be transparent, but also to engage in a dialogue so that we can have an appreciation to the bigger picture that we're here about. We're here for ICANN. So by being together in this one forum is helping us dialogue and be transparent, but also understand the different challenges across from different perspectives. Thank you for your participation, and we will publish this presentation on our website. Have a nice day.